Welcome and thanks for listening. My name is Christian Buckley, and you're listening to the Collab Talk podcast. In this episode, I'm talking with Ioana Mansouridou Onassi, CEO of Dextigo, on the topic of improving corporate culture using AI and peer-to-peer mentoring. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Collab Talk podcast, where we discuss the convergence of technology, business productivity, and collaboration culture. My guest today is Ioana Mansouridou Onassi, co-founder and CEO of Dextigo. Welcome, Ioana.
You did an amazing job with my name. I'm impressed.
I butcher every name every time. So, but that's one. I wrote it down phonetically last time in my notes. So in our last time. Well, Ioana, welcome. And we're talking today about improving corporate culture using AI and peer-to-peer mentoring, which I know is right up your alley. It's what your company focuses on. I'm excited to dig into this topic. But maybe you could first start with, give us a background, your own background and your company. Tell us a little bit about your company.
Absolutely. Happy to do so. So my background is in HR and talent development. I live and breathe skills development. And I always think that especially soft skills or known as durable skills, you know, can make or break someone's career. Like no matter what they do, these skills are transferable. We all need them. We need to communicate with others, to collaborate with others, and to lead others in order to get to where we want to get. So I've been always fascinated about how can we develop people's skills and what drives them, what motivates them, why some people have them in higher levels than others. And so my first degree is in psychology and communications. I came from Greece 8 years ago to pursue that. And then I did my master's in strategic management with a focus on talent development, where I actually did a lot of research on high potential employees. And I was working with a professor who's a talent expert, and he really put me into this whole like HR field in Greece. Like I never even thought, you know, I was going to do that, but I knew I liked entrepreneurial things. I like startups, and you know, it all made sense because without people, you have no business.
Right.
And that's how it started. And I actually thought I was going to do consulting like you initially. I was like, such an exciting field. You know, you always work with different projects, different people. But, you know, life happens and I end up working for a startup, which I'm so grateful for because I loved it. I had an amazing experience. That startup is named Aptivio. It's a B2B SaaS revenue AI solution. So they help sales teams develop basically the right intent data to understand who their ideal customer profile is, who is ready to buy. And in that role, I was the VP of people and chief of staff. So I got to work very closely with the CEO, saw all operations. I did customer success for a while, you know, sales, everything. And I was hiring internationally. Like we had people from Paris, from Hong Kong, from Lisbon. So it was very evident to me that these soft skills are very needed, but very hard to find and even more hard to develop, especially remotely through a screen, because they take time, right? Like you need to have life experience to know how to handle conflict and to negotiate. And because during COVID, everybody was working from all around the world, I found it extremely hard to find just a software solution that was personalized enough to work with individuals across teams and really make them better. Like it's very hard to do, you know, an LMS, like to do a course for 2 hours and suddenly say, oh, I'm a better leader. Like that doesn't happen. So that's when, you know, the idea of Dextigo came about. I was like, I need to do something about it. I know it's a struggle with other companies. I did my market research. And to be honest, initially, I thought it was going to be a B2C product because I was like, everybody needs this. Like everybody can be better. But later on, it made more sense to go into a B2B route. And later on, who knows, maybe we do go still B2C. But long story short, you know, I go to my CEO at the time. I'm like, hey, I have this idea. I want to help other people, leaders, develop their team soft skills. And he loved it. And he became our first investor, first client. And that's how it all started, you know, a year ago. But what's funny, I always say that like my co-founder, he has experience in this space too. He built an LMS product for UBS in the past, and then he went at Amex for 8 years.
For folks that don't know who LMS, Learning Management System, yeah, it because it's I mean, when you're talking about leadership development and these HR programs, you know, a lot of companies, like, that's their approach. Like, we'll have an LMS, we'll have a platform out there, we'll put courses up there, we're done. Like,
Yes,
it's
exactly.
solved. We like and like that that's you know, what we understand now, of course, is as everybody has different learning styles, and some people can go and follow along with courseware and get a lot out of that. I would argue the majority of people don't fall into that category, that they need to have more, you know, experiential. They need to have more classroom. They have that one-on-one focus. So again, all the different styles, there's nothing wrong with any one of those, but trying to solve a problem by, you know, one method is not going to solve the problem.
100%. I mean, that's exactly what brought my co-founder and I together. We were saying these solutions are just not it. I mean, they're very old on the technology standpoint, but also they're not creating this gamified experience and learning that's needed, in particular for Gen Z, because every generation also learns differently. And what I want to do as a minority myself, like female immigrant founder, I wanted to be able to empower like people from all sorts of background to develop like pitching skills and presentation skills and these skills that can really help you get to the next level in your career, no matter again their level of education or things like that. So take a different approach to coaching. Like coaching has been for the C-suite for the most part, right? Like a CEO, a CXO is normal to have a coach, but for a first-time manager, you don't really see that.
Right.
However, the perspective when it comes to this is that why would I invest in a young manager where they might leave in a couple of years? But today, there's such an attrition issue that this is the only way you can actually attract and retain that young manager.
I well, one other wrinkle thrown in there, because I was, you know, a couple companies, large companies, so Hewlett Packard and Microsoft that I worked with and saw some of the, you know, the people manager training, and different approaches, and, you know, really enjoyed my time with HP. Microsoft, they had a program for people management. It was called MEC, and I don't know if there's remnants of MEC, Microsoft people. Maybe it's still around, but you know, 15 years ago, you know, they said it was the management excellence community, and they wouldn't just put every manager through. If you were, you know, managing a team of people, it had to be somebody that had gone through the program had to identify you as a people manager as somebody who would be a fit for the program. So the idea there was that there are a lot of people that are promoted to manager that should never manage another human being. They're terrible at the people side of. They're good at their jobs, they're good at operations, the technology, whatever it is. And because they're the best in that role, they need somebody to manage a team, they're thrust into that role. And you can even have a good frontline manager. I've had these who are not good at people management, but they're good at just helping the team move forward. But still, they're, I would argue, not a candidate for going through. And I don't think that they're going to become a better leader, somebody that people will gravitate towards. I don't know if you differentiate between that, or if your view is that everybody can become a better manager.
So that's an excellent question. I remember back at college that we had a debate in a class about are, you know, leaders made or they're born, and it's like the similar dichotomy here. I don't see it as is someone like manager material or not. I see it as are they coachable or not. And I truly think if you're coachable, you can do anything. You can learn anything and you can fit in different industries. But if you're not, you just will stay in your box. And we actually have incorporated a coachability index with IndexedGo because I think that's the issue with training till today. Like, people are creating all these amazing training programs, but they're teaching people that could not maybe absorb that because they're not coachable. And then they don't know what's happening. Is it that my training isn't good? Is it that it's the wrong department? It's nothing. It's just the individual. The individual mindset and capabilities predict, first of all, if your training will be successful. And if, let's say, you do have the best training on planet Earth, it could just mean that they don't learn through that means,
Right.
that in person. Maybe they just have to read, they have to
Right.
do. Have, as you said earlier, there's all sorts of learning styles. So that's what I think is the source. Like, let's understand based on how this person responds to different scenario-based challenges according to the role, how their facial expressions are, their tone, their pitch, content of what they say, like a lot of different data points. Let's start seeing if they increase their scores like over time, if they do better, and if they're taking into account what the coach has already told them, because that is the best predictor of learning agility. Otherwise, we know, yeah, they're not coachable. And so, for instance, and let's say admin doesn't then blame DexTheGo or any other software saying, oh, this is not a good software, because the problem is not the software, it's maybe that person's coachability.
Right. Well, it's interesting. So, as part of your solution, is it like you're is it like an initial assessment up front where you are, or is there constant reassessment of that throughout the process? Because again, there's some people that just absorb it, learn at a slower rate, but what they learn sticks. I know that there are people that are fantastic at absorbing new information, and they could, if you tested them, quiz them on it, facts, everything come back, but 6 months later, it's like it's gone. It's a wash. Because I fall into that category of, I'm much more of a read on my own, consume information that way, and then have conversations, collaborate, look at it in practice, and so. As far as testing facts and data, it's like I'm not as good at even a multiple choice around that. I don't learn that way. But I pick up concepts and I put into practice the concepts. It's actually why I actually preferred doing night school for my MBA program, because I was incorporating everything that I was learning into my work versus if I were just a full-time student.
Yeah, you hit it right on the nail. Like, people learn in context. And that's the best advice I had gotten too when I was considering an MBA. They're like, you need some work experience first. You need to go and work for some years so that when they teach you certain things, they connect in your head. And so, your question about how we do the assessment, there's no one set assessment at the beginning. It's something that continuously gets assessed because, to your point, a lot of things happen during the day and after months that what we care about is that they develop and that we assess their own benchmark, how they started and how they're improving. We don't compare like X individual with Y individual just because they have the same role necessarily. And what we've seen, because we did a lot of research on that, most softwares, I would say, have an assessment at the beginning. And historically, assessments like, personality, leadership assessments have been designed just for a few people to be able to give them, to facilitate them. Like, we know the biggest ones, I don't know if I'm supposed to name them, but regardless,
Oh, you can name it. Wait, we're fine here, but
yeah, like, I don't know, like the Gallup one, the StrengthsFinder, all these things. I think there's some pros and cons because I can now like understand, okay, my personality a little better or my skills better. But that type of assessments also provide a lot of suggestions of, what type of career you should follow and what environment you should be in. With firstly, it's very fixed. I don't think that every individual is taking this input and is actually doing whatever they say, but maybe they get affected, and you know, if they're in a crossroad, they actually follow that, and who knows, like there's no data that suggests if you do that it's better than if you didn't, and it's
Yeah.
very hard to know how helpful they are.
Yeah, I'm not really having been through that. Again, a lot of bigger companies, you know, the more likely you've been through programs like that. But I've never seen people like rely heavily on that. I mean, there's the personality traits, like, you know, hey, I'm an ENFP. There's that kind of stuff. And where it is useful, in my experience, is when you do it as a team, as an organization, and it's not so much about your individual, you know, classification against that system. It helps you better understand the makeup of the team that you're on, and sometimes can help you identify, okay, this is why this person rubs me wrong every time we have the weekly communications, because their style is opposed, diametrically opposed to my style in this one area. I mean, I've had those people like where I personally get along great, but just something that just rubs me wrong, you know, on something, the way that they work. And so it helps me understand that so that we can get past that. We can improve communication and collaboration.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I think that works very well in team dynamic. Back to, you know, the context side. So how we do it with Dexico is you do these challenges and then you get feedback based on what you did great and what you can continue to work on. But because there is an emotion engine that analyzes throughout, like how you said what you said, it can help you understand your triggers, you know, what type of communicator you are, or like maybe when you're in these type of situations, you know, you tend to, let's say, have X conversational style, right? All these things, I think, do vary in context. So my only issue with these assessments is that they're very generic, and the questions you respond to, since you are the only one responding to, can be very biased, right? Like if it says, are you a great leader? Yes, 10 out of 10, everybody says the best
about
themselves.
Of course, right.
But the true test is like we do, you can upload the video in Dexico and you can see how, while you talk, the other person feels.
Right.
And all these things, like in context again, can show you your true skills level, not what you think, you know, you have high levels of, etc. So to conclude, you know, there is so many things out there, but I think half of it is how a tool or a software is created, and half of it is how it's being administered within the company. So as long as you have the right person that conveys the benefits of it and why someone uses it, I think you'll be fine.
Well, I know that the concept of, you know, of peer-to-peer, while some of the technology is newer, you know, that part's not new or novel, but the incorporating, you know, peer-to-peer into this kind of development program, it leads to a lot of accountability. It's like what you just talked about. It's because, especially if you're paired with somebody that, I mean, my personality type is such that my filter levels are low. If you ask me my opinion, you need to be prepared to receive an opinion. But having that accountability of having other people that you're talking to that are, you know, on the same level, like going through the same learning path, as well as direct from managers, can help from your leadership, can only help with that development. And so something, if you're hiding behind, you know, online classes or just reading material and never getting that direct, again, that contextual, that practical feedback, then are you going to be able to learn?
Absolutely. And I think that the old way of mentorship, like you, when you had the mentor and mentee type of community, is not working anymore. Like you usually in a conversation with a mentor always have something to add to as the mentee. Like it's a continuous learning experience for both parties. So for us, the way mentorship can work is by connecting people with each other, not just because, you know, they're in the same role or same company or same location, but it's truly what skill they can offer and what skill they can get. So there's a complementarity and also what you're offering, and both feel empowered and of equal value, if you wish. I think that's when mentorship can be long-term and efficient, because you don't want to only think, oh, when I need this, I'll go to this mentor, because at different stages in your life, you need different types of mentors with different experiences. So being connected on demand with a person that fulfills those criteria at that specific point in time is going to increase the likelihood of you actually developing through that conversation.
And how important is it to make these tools, make this available to all employees? I mean, is it something that, because that's another issue, is that you see, you know, upper management has these, as you said, you know, the executive team has these coaches. How do you train the next generation of leaders if you'd never give them the opportunity to go through and develop these kinds of skills?
I think it's a must have. Like 80% of an employee's engagement within a company is directly connected to their experience with their manager. If those young managers, first time managers, don't have people skills, they're derailing the entire.
It's the number one reason why people leave a role is their manager. I've had that experience several times. Yes.
Yeah, and vice versa, right? You might have stayed because you had an excellent manager,
yep. But
might have not liked something else in the company. And today, like, it's so interesting that especially millennials, actually 60% of millennials, I was reading a study earlier, they are willing, they put number one learning opportunities as a criterion when they're looking for a job, which is the highest percentage than any other generation. And I think they're just, to your point, fed up with the fact that they're stuck in toxic cultures and managers. Like, they want to be able to have an impact in the organization, and they want to feel like they belong, there's trust. And today we see that more and more with the remote work, that there's a huge lack of trust. Like, you don't know if your employee is working or they're in the backyard playing with their dog. And so collaboration tools that build those communication skills are so critical today, and they could be fundamentally the reason why an employee stays. Like, you might not even have to give them more money if you can give them a way for them to feel included and feel like they belong and feel like they're developing their skills both personally and professionally.
So what are some of the challenges that companies face in building a culture of peer-to-peer mentoring, and how does Dextigo help overcome those?
Yes, great question again. I think the number one is the criteria that they take into account when creating a mentorship program. Like, it could be, okay, who is volunteering to be a mentor? Let's see who is in need of a mentor. And they match them sometimes like that. And because it makes sense, right? Like, you have one, two, let's say HR people, like they don't know everybody, like they just need to put a program together. So that makes sense. The software can do all that much more, I would say, in an advanced way and faster. And it can also track and be accountable to see if people are meeting, if they are developing, how they feel after those interactions. And also even giving awards, like how we do it in Dextigo, because you can say, I mean, when I met Christian, I felt like, you know, X, like, or he's the coolest person, or he's, you know, anything that you want to increase like that morale and boost this person's confidence,
yep.
Is amazing, because an HR person wouldn't know how that conversation went to afterwards give you that type of recognition, and it wouldn't mean anything because you had the conversation with someone else.
Right.
So
now, there's something to be said about the power of gamification. In it, and it's not just that, you know, hey, we're giving people stickers, you know, like kids coming into kindergarten and like, oh, good job today, here's a sticker kind of things. It is a way. I look at it more as a way to nurture managers and peer to peer as well, to recognize the good work of other people. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not just handing out stickers. It is it's changing the culture so that you are recognizing and articulating the value that other people are delivered, recognizing people for good work. Like, that is a it's not just empty platitudes about the workplace. It's people then strive to do better, to go above and beyond the job description, mm-hmm. to deliver for their customer and for the company. And so it's just a good thing. And it's a circular thing. It builds up, feeds upon itself and builds upon itself.
Mm-hmm. It's like when someone becomes a parent, you know, you start thinking twice about your kid. Like, it's the same thing when you're a mentor, you're in a leadership position, you start to think, okay, others are watching, let me be on my best behavior. And it by default creates this culture of learning, of accountability, of respect, of wanting to help each other. And the other beauty is that you don't only have to have peer-to-peer mentorship within your organization, you can do that with another organization and still find someone that you're compatible with, and potentially even make partnerships. You never know. But this sense of community-led growth, both in sales, in learning, in everything, I think is where we're heading to. Like, yeah, the world is shifting to everything community-led. I truly believe that.
Yeah, there's a great example of that. So I'm working in the Microsoft ecosystem. There's a group called the International Association of Microsoft Channel Partners, or IAMCP. And so I've been a chapter president. I've helped organize this, and it's a physical community. We get together on a monthly basis. All people from different businesses. Sometimes there's competitors in the room, but everybody there is hyper-focused on partnering, on working together. I've done deals with direct competitors where we found areas where we actually complemented, agreed to not compete on the other areas, and brought business to each other. And built friendships. And of course, because the other side of that you have to remember is that most likely we're not always going to work for those companies. And so don't burn all those bridges just because you're working for competitors. You never know who's going to be working where later, and where there might be an opportunity to reach out and, hey, I've got this opportunity, would you come over? You know, mm-hmm. Anyway, but that's through that peer-to-peer, physical networking. I had another thought too, as you were talking. So I realized your company provides like the platform and tools. How much consulting needs to go into? How much guidance do you have to provide to a customer that might identify, hey, yeah, we need these tools, we need the help there. But how much, consulting effort does it take to get them on the right path?
None really. I mean, it's a product-led approach where basically they can come in, create an admin profile, invite their team, and we can customize the platform further if they want. Like, you can integrate it to a CRM, like any internal tools or even training materials they have to fine-tune the AI coaching model so you can speak more of their language, you know, use their terminologies and their processes. But outside of that, like they really set up and they start using it, and then just feed the data. We feed the data in a like dashboard for, let's say, a learning and development manager or a team manager, like a sales, maybe a VP of sales enablement that wants to see how their sales team is upskilling, how much they're learning how to stay on script and develop skills they need to handle objections. So it's pretty smooth. And that's where I think the HR transformation will become successful. If you make a product that doesn't necessarily need tons of hours of consulting, you maybe do, a kickoff call, and then you just create a relationship in case they need extra support, and obviously to prove the ROI. But it's very easy to use and get up and going in a day.
So what's your recommendations for leaders who see that the direction they need to go, but that they need some help in fostering a culture of continuous learning and growth? I mean, so what can a leader do to foster that process?
Yeah, it's interesting. I posted something on LinkedIn today about the fact that I've been seeing more and more HR and talent leaders actually getting so overwhelmed in the last years that they either turn into consulting or they even leave and change fully. which totally makes sense because there's just so many changes and layoffs and COVID, and they are the main point of all the complaints. So I don't think they can fix everything alone. They need to leverage a supportive leadership that actually gives them the budget and the green flag, you know, to go ahead and find the right resources, whether this is software or services, something that works for their organization. But I truly think it's like a team effort, back to the collaboration. It can be started by one person, but for it to be sustained and rolled out correctly, this person needs to have very good persuasiveness skills and get others to jump in, right? And change is always hard, no matter what type of change that is. But I do think that we're in such a good timing where the world is actually agreeing and seeing the importance of L&D and of people overall acting as, I would say, champions and creating those right benefit packages for people. So
well, the whole EXP or employee experience space is really, that's one of the things I know with the pandemic. You say, well, what good things came out of the pandemic? I talk about this all the time. One major thing is that there created more empathy for this topic, for this area, realizing that employee burnout is a real thing. And we can't just paper over the health and well-being of employees. We have to look at, you know, what we're asking them to do. And a lot of these, especially where there's downsizing, there's fewer people trying to do more work. So work is increasing, number of people in an organization might be tightening up. So we're asking a lot. We need to be thinking as managers, as leaders, you know, how is this impacting our workforce? And it needs to be a part of that ongoing strategy. It's not just a, hey, we did this one thing and we're done.
Couldn't agree more. That's why earlier I said both personally and professionally, you need to be able to help employees, because back to these like durable skills, if they don't communicate well with people in their life, their families and their friends, they won't be able to communicate well with employees. If they don't know how to handle conflict, they will never be able to actually ask and fight for a promotion that then will affect their mental health, and then they won't be productive. It's all connected. And I'm very glad, that, and sad at the same time, that we had to go through so much as a society to be able to see this, but we are in this point where there's no doubt that the way we're working is not sustainable. People were not ever meant to work as hard, and of course we're going to burn out, but there is options and there is tools and there is communities that want to help, but HR leaders themselves cannot do it all alone. They have to have the support of the rest of their leadership team. And I think leadership also is starting to see, because they know they cannot attract and retain anyone if they don't cater to their true needs.
And looking ahead, because part of this, with all the changes that's going on, part of that is technology is rapidly developing, evolving. So how do you see the role of AI evolving in the area of professional development and employee retention?
I'm actually very excited to see how the world will progress with AI. And I'm publishing an article in the next days about this. I think everything will have an AI agent, like everything you do, from sales, prospecting, to marketing, to HR, you know, to everything. Which is an amazing sign that we should look into those skills that we were meant to develop since we came on this earth, which are leadership and collaboration. And it brings up the questions of how should society be formed? Where are we going? Like, I think the focus on AI has been a little bit wrong, in my opinion, because it has been negative on the focus of, okay, ethics and all this. This is great. Of course, we have to have this, but don't focus on all the dark. Focus on, okay, when this is going to be everywhere, because it will, what opportunities is this bringing about as humans, as society? It's bringing some amazing work-life balance opportunities where we can actually focus on what matters, do things that we love, and truly, for a people ops person, allow them to do what they want and why they chose their job, which is to cater to the people and not deal with, other negative things that they have to, because AI is not supporting their work today. So I think the future is bright. I think we will figure out all the logistics and legalities and everything in between, and every company will most likely have a chief ethics officer. And outside of that, the people who truly have empathy will be the ones that will create the new era of work.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there the fact that we're entering this new realm, and so many people are asking, in fact, that all the companies that are leading the charge with AI are talking about the ethical implications. And part of that, like that's hey, just in my 30 plus years in IT, like this is the first time where at the forefront of the discussion of new ways of technology, the ethics and administration of that are part of the discussion right up front, not something that's after the fact, years later, let's try and figure out the damage that we've done and fix things. So I think that is really healthy. But your other point is that I make this all the time, is you can't make changes and adjust if you're not moving forward. Like if we were to just halt, like I'm against these people, it's like, oh, we don't know enough about understand about how AI should impact, so let's stop doing this until we understand. Like no, it's like stopping your car in the middle of the freeway. No, like you go pull off to the side if you're not sure of this, but we'll drive cautiously, but we will move forward on this. We'll learn and we'll adjust. I think that's the right approach for this, because we're not going to learn, we're not going to make things better if we just stop, because then we stop learning.
Right. And the other thing is that I feel like people get overwhelmed with things that are not even really happening now. Like they're so in the future. Let's first deal with everything we have going on today, because the technologies that are available in the mass market, they're nothing crazy. Like we're not talking about robots coming into your office and, taking over what you're doing. We're talking about a software that, for instance, can record a call, give you some advice afterwards,
Give
connect
you
with
a
your.
summary of a complex call. That's the thing I love the most. Right.
If they focus on actually what's out there and what they can use, I think they would love it. Like people would actually see how useful it is for their work and would embrace it. But because of, the media and all of that, they're thinking about scientific scenarios or things that will happen in 10 years. And it's great to prepare, but I think it's also important to stay focused on how you can embrace it today, so you overcome competition, so you stay relevant, so you actually have a place on the table. Because if you don't educate yourself and you rather say, okay, I'll close my eyes, then when the time comes, people won't ask you for your opinion. They'll ask the opinion of people who have been using AI.
Well, I've got one last question for you, and it's of course a small one. Can you share your thoughts on how organizations can balance technology-driven coaching with the human element of mentorship? Because that's like the concern with any tools, is that people become overly reliant on tools and then forget the human element. I used to refer to this as like spreadsheet-driven management. People that are so looking at the data, and then they're not looking in the context, the human aspect of that, of what might be happening, the personal life of an employee that might be affecting their performance. If you're just looking at the numbers, you may completely miss that they had a family member pass away, that something else is major is happening in their life that impacts their performance. You can't just look at the tools. You have to actually have conversations with people. So how do organizations balance those two things?
I said earlier when you asked me about, we'll have AI agents for everything. I didn't say we won't have humans, right? Like I truly believe it will be a tech-led and human-led combination where the humans will come in when those very critical issues arise and they have to actually take action. But all the preparation, if you will happen from AI agents. And the way you balance this when it comes to coaching is also similar. The AI coach is doing the practice, is preparing, if you will, the user for your one-on-one mentorship by understanding where they are in their journey, what skills they need to develop, giving them that self-awareness so they can also ponder and say, okay, these are my top two issues right now. This is what I want to focus on my coaching or mentorship session with the human coach. And they take that in and now they have a more meaningful conversation. I take it back to what we said about like one or two HR people for 100 of employees, let's say. They don't know what you're going through on a day-to-day. But having an AI coach that will track your data over time and will create a very realistic and personalized approach to your learning, to your needs, can be an awesome summary that will be sent to that HR person or any equivalent that will see it and will understand where you are in your journey and say, hey, Christian, I see you've been doing excellent on like communications practice, but you're really struggling with conflict resolution. Let's talk about that. Let's help you. Talk to me. So I think they have to balance it because neither will be successful on its own. And you can practice as much as you want with an AI coach, but if you don't go and talk to a human afterwards to know that indeed you learned these skills, it doesn't matter. Like I always say, for introverts, these are people who might not even go to a conference because they don't have an elevator pitch perfect. And they might be afraid, but having the opportunity to practice in a psychologically safe space for them is amazing. Mm-hmm. They get their confidence, they're like, yeah, I'll go, or I'll go easier than if I didn't have that. So right. The opportunities that are being given to people from all sorts of thing of walks of life is tremendous. We cannot shut that down, but they also need the support of other humans, 100%.
One other thing that just came to mind too is as a complaint that I've had of these programs and tools is that it's more balanced over the course of a quarter or over the year. Like many of us have had you know, write-ups for the end of year review, and it's like you focused in on one project that you were more my manager more involved in that had some issues. You've not mentioned all of the other successes like up to that point. And that was just 3 months ago. What about those other projects? You know, so having a true comprehensive view, so the summary is more balanced based off of the work, not just, you know, that one, maybe usually negative issue that the manager is more aware of, which then taints the entire review, the process, their perspective of what's actually helping, what's happening on the ground, I should say. That's another reason I love the idea of the automation, because the AI doesn't care. One, looking at time, it's looking at the balance of all the information, all the inputs over time, and providing that balanced view, that unbiased view.
And your peer feedback as well, not just your managers.
Right.
Decreasing that bias.
Well, it's an exciting space. This is one of those where, again, I did my MBA in technology management, and I was on the fence of doing an MAOM, so a master's in organizational management, just because this is a space that I'm really passionate about. And so it's been great to connect and talk on this topic. We'll have to do this again. We'll have to go into another aspect of this organizational management and leadership development, because it's just a great topic. So
I would love to. Yeah, I get so fascinated by all these things. I think they're super complex on the one hand and super simple on the other, but we tend to make them complex.
Always. It's more fun to make them complex. There's stuff to talk about then.
Yes.
Well, Joanna, really appreciate you for being a guest on the Collab Talk podcast.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Collab Talk podcast. New episodes are published weekly, and you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and most other podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.